In 2015, my next guest was appointed as Ireland's Ombudsman for Children. His job is to be a strong, credible and independent beacon for children all over the country. And that is undoubtedly a very hard job. Dr. Niall Muldoon, you're very welcome to Global Village.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
Now, it's been ages I've been wanting to get you on the show. Finally, I have you here. So I'm like, okay, I have so many questions to ask. Okay, so I'm mindful that we're going to run out of time. So, but let's first start from basics. You know, okay. What does the Office of the Ombudsman for Children do?
Okay.
And where does the word ombudsman come from?
Well, the word itself, ombudsman, is...
Which is fine because with you, but when your predecessor, Emily Logan, is just very strange.
Yes, but it was a Norwegian name. Originally, it's a Scandinavian word. Ombuds is defender of rights, and then ombudsman means the defender of all man's rights. So from my point of view, I'm the defender of all children's rights. So we found it to be non-gender. So I think Emily kept the word ombudsman as well.
She did. But she would always explain what it was.
The genesis of it. So it's essentially our job is to defend children's rights, as you say, and to promote and protect children's rights throughout the country. Any child who interacts with the government in any way in which the government is providing a service, they have the recourse to us if they're not happy with the service they're getting. I also have the remit to advise government on legislation and policy that are in relation to children's rights and how it can be improved for children. And I also have a mandatory obligation to educate and improve participation for children across the country as well in relation to their children's rights and promoting the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. So that's the basic score. It sounds simple. I mean, one of the days, the day after the census, I went to bed with 1.2 million children to look after, and I woke up with 1.5 million children to look after. When the census changed from 2011 to 2016, so it was.
How do you sleep at night, Niall?
We do our best. The same as every job, you do your best. You try and promote everybody as best you can, and then you pick some of the cases and the complaints we take. We try and make sure that they are where there's a systemic element to it. We can change the whole system as well as just one individual case.
So let's talk about, just for a minute, about what kind of calls you'd get. Because anyone listening to this might not know that of the services that you provide. And what's the remit, I suppose?
Yeah, well, I mean, we, as I say, it's any government-based agency or any agency that's funded by the government to provide services for children. So mostly, I mean, the majority of our cases would be around education. We also have complaints in relation to child welfare, any of the TUSLA issues, family welfare issues. Foster care, child protection. So if somebody has complained locally to wherever the issue is, whether it's with a school, a hospital, social welfare office, if they've made the complaint and they're not happy with the outcome of that complaint, then we're set up as an alternative to going to court. Previously, the Ombudsman for Children, if you weren't happy with the service, you had to sue somebody. And obviously, that's not the way you want to go. So our job is to be a fair and independent service in relation to complaints.
Very good. So let's talk about education.
Sure.
For a second there. I know everybody's currently on summer holidays for the schools, but Richard Bruton has announced that he will remove religion as a criteria in the school's admission process. I mean, this has been a bugbear for so long, for just not even parents who are not Catholic, but also parents who are just from other religions, but also parents who just want to move away from a school system that is predominantly religious. So where do you stand there, and do you think that this is going to happen?
Well, from a children's rights point of view, we've always been encouraging that there should be no barrier to any child entering a public funded school. So no discrimination on the grounds of religion. That's what we've always believed, and we still believe that. Having acknowledged that, we also recognise that Irish system is so different to every other country in the world that we handed over or outsourced our education system to the religious services over 125 years ago. And many other countries did that too, but they took it back
quicker.
We're now in a situation where we're finding ourselves with 90% of all schools are still Catholic-based and Catholic ethos. So if the discrimination if the move that the minister is suggesting takes away the religious barrier for baptism barrier in relation to Catholic schools, that'll make a huge difference in 90% of all schools. We still believe that all religious discrimination is wrong in relation to children. So we would expect that will later on be moved so that it'll take away the discrimination in all situations of religion. So there should be no grounds for a child to be discriminated against once it's a public funded school. From our point of view, this is a very big step forward, huge step forward in moving into a pluralistic side. We also have to look at increasing the availability of other schools, other types of schools around the country. You know, that's they're talking about another 300 or 400 schools, pluralist, multi-denominational schools by 2030. That's a slow process. You know, there's almost 4,000 schools in the country. So we're making a big difference. But again, we've also got to recognise that many of the Catholic schools already have huge range of children going to them. You know, so that it's only overcrowding, it's where the situation of overcrowding that this is really going to make a difference, where religion isn't one of the criteria that can be used in that situation. So we're moving in the right direction. But as you say, the census shows, I think, someone like close to 15-20% of people are now declaring as something other than Catholic. So we have to start reflecting that in our education system. And this is a big step forward. A lot more steps need to be taken as well.
Often we have this discussion, you know, because as a new parent myself, you know, there are many parents like myself who are dissatisfied with the school system altogether. Mm-hmm. You know, not just the religious element of it, just the whole system. And Ireland, I think the number of families that have decided to homeschool is apparently doubled. And I can see, as a family, the idea of homeschooling or maybe part homeschooling, where maybe there's like a 50-50 situation where they do go to school and then maybe be partly homeschooled. Is there are there plans to maybe support families like ourselves more?
It's something that's starting to grow. I haven't seen plans in that regard, but I do know, I think the last number I heard, there's something like about 1,300 different families with permission, so that there may be two or three children in each of those families.
Because research shows that the children who are home-educated actually do very well and go off to
I think it's a move that's starting in Ireland, all right. I know there's bigger numbers in other countries, so I think it's something we need to catch up with in the education welfare system to look at that and to make sure that the support is there for people who decide to do that, and that there's proper quality assurance as well in that regard, you know, and so that people aren't using it as a way of just keeping their children home for other reasons, which, you know, in the old days that could have happened for work or labour or farming or fishing or whatever, those sort of situations would have been the case before. So it's making sure that everything's right for everybody. So I think it is a move that's there. But again, I think the majority of people will be in a formal type of school system, and I think we still need to work on that. Things like, even if it's only last year that we got the teaching council available for professional misconduct cases. So that's a step into the future that we should have done many, many years ago. It's one of the few professional, one of the longest delayed professional oversight bodies. It took a long time for that to happen. I mean, as a psychologist, I've had oversight like that for 20 years. Social workers have it. All sorts of doctors and everyone else have it. So we're moving in that direction.
But you get struck off.
You get struck off.
But as a teacher...
It wasn't possible up until recently. So that the teaching council are now available. So that'll improve things. That'll allow people to go in the right direction.
I think people are still surprised at that.
Yeah,
I think,
of course.
You know,
yeah.
He's an individual who has access to, you know, so many children on a daily basis, and still it takes so long before you can actually get that person out of the system.
That's right. And I think that's moving things forward. Another thing that's coming forward is the parent and student charter, which the minister has brought forward, which will make a huge difference. And not many people know about that yet. That's a bill that's going to allow parents and students, and I'm hoping he'll change the title to student and parent charter, so that they can have an input to the charter in every single school, so that you're actually asking the people who matter what they want from the school, what they want from their education, what they want from their free time, what they want from their teachers, how they want to evaluate it, how they want to engage with the system properly. So you get a sense of, and then there's a feedback that comes from that. There's an annual report that has to be presented to the party. So up until now, and I always rallied against this and found it very, very difficult to take, when people talked about education partners, you were talking about unions, teachers, parents and departments.
And not the children.
No children. You know, 900,000 children in education. In national school education and more, and another 300,000 in secondary schools, they weren't part of the system. They weren't important because they didn't vote. We now are moving to that situation, that parent and student charter. The other piece that comes with that is that if I get a complaint in relation to a school and I make a recommendation to a board of management, up until now I had nowhere else to go with that. But now I can make a reference to the minister, who can then make a recommendation or a direction to that board of management, which is the first time you connect the two. Up until now, the minister wouldn't have that sort of oversight of boards. So now we're going to have a connection for the man who pays the piper is now going to have an element of calling the tune.
So you actively consult children and find out which direction do they want to go? Because after all, it's their future. You and I are not going to be here.
Absolutely. And it's their education. Again, if they have an input and a sense of agency about it, they'd be much more invested in how that education goes. So I think, and one of the things I want to make sure is that when the minister does any of this, he does consult with children as well. So I know he's bringing in second level students, councils and stuff like that to consult about this legislation, which is fantastic. But I would urge them to even go to lower. Mm-hmm. I think there's no point, no reason to think that somebody in third class doesn't have a relevant opinion on this.
And especially now.
Yeah.
Because children develop way quicker and wiser than all of us put together.
Correct, correct. And I think we're moving in that direction.
So let's talk about mental health. Yeah. Because moving away from education, our nation's children, when it comes to mental health support services, you know, working in mental health myself, there are some great services out there. And there are some areas in the country where the services are just like the dots are just not connected. And it's a bit like potluck where you are and who is there. And so what's the Ombudsman for Children doing to improve this? So whether it's a child in Cork, whether it's a child up in Donegal, that they'll experience the same level of professional service.
Yeah, it's extremely frustrating. I think that's one of the things that we're constantly looking for, is that level of consistency throughout the country. You know, and I think there's a couple of elements that go with that. First of all, I think we need to start at the very start, which is primary care, which is the very first time somebody considers themselves as needing help, that we have some sort of system in place for them. So that's through the GP, having easy access to counselling or therapy. And I think resources are not the only answer. There's ways of thinking about it. I think we have to be more creative in that regard. You know, we can have play therapists, drama therapists, art therapists, music therapists, counselors, all
the range. You're a psychologist yourself.
I'm a psychologist. I don't mind who does it. I've seen it. I've worked with all of those professions. Children need something. And I think at the moment we're waiting for such a narrow field of professionals that we'll never be able to fill the spaces. And I think there's also a call, and having worked in child sexual abuse, I think one of the biggest real discriminations is the fact that we have, thanks to the apology from Bertie Ahern, we have a very positive, strong, free National Counselling Service for adults around the country. There's one within an hour and 15 minutes of everybody. That's the plan. 10 centres around the country. Fully accessible, self-referral. We should have exactly the same system available for children. That's not the case. You know, accessible, free, self-referral, and looked after properly. That would be a very, and then straight away you're taking away somebody who's been declared
the gatekeepers,
and you're giving them a system that's early intervention, so they won't go into the mental health system in the way they are now because they're waiting a year, 2 years. And I haven't worked with sexual abuse for many years, and you know as well as anybody that you shut down if you're on a waiting list. You say, okay, to hell with this, I'll keep this to myself, I'll keep the secret left in, and I'll find other ways to manage it. And the longer you wait, if you get a child at 10 years of age and spend 2 years working therapeutically with them, you will change their world. They will blossom. They will come out of the darkness and find a way to live and be proud of themselves and find out it's not their fault. And their family will change and everybody will grow from that. If you wait till they're 22, you could be 10 years and it might be too late then, because you find misappropriate ways to deal with life. You've handled things wrong. You've made a lot of other mistakes and they've compounded where the starting point was. And you might not even remember the starting point. So early intervention is crucial. Moving on then to things like CAMHS. You know, I was in there's lots of talks about how we fix the mental health system. I've been told that there's at least 15 unfillable posts around the country in relation to mental health and psychiatry. That's, you know, so then we have to be creative. We have to find ways. If I was running a business, I wouldn't allow that to be the case. I'd find other ways to do it. So again, I'd look at things like, can we find somebody else to take those positions? Can we rearrange the law so that we can fill those positions different ways? Can we take pediatricians and help in some way? It's finding other ways. I think what's happened is we're trying to find a solution from within the problem that's exactly using the same rules and the same regulations and the same thinking, and that's not going to work. If you've declared something as unfillable, then that needs to start from scratch. You need to look at it again and say, how are we doing this? And these are systems, and these are systems that have been set up by us adults. We need to change them for the benefit of the children and do something creative about that. There's a National Youth Task Force for Mental Health was set up by Minister McEntee, Mental Health Minister. There's a fantastic consultation going on at the moment with Senator Freeman, Joan Freeman from Peter House. Done fantastic job of hearing from all angles, from parents, children, professionals, politicians. And there's going to be a new Oireachtas Committee on Mental Health set up by the new Minister for Mental Health, Jim Daly. A lot of talking, Mm. A lot of people coming together who know the inside outs of mental health. We need to make strides. We need to start making strides instead of baby steps. And I think people need to go outside of their comfort zones and allow themselves to say, you know what, this is very uncomfortable. I don't think this is the way we wanted to go, but I'm going to take a look at it differently.
And if I can add, just in relation to children who are transgender, from a point of view of getting that diagnosis, which is necessary so that they can then access treatment and then just get on with their lives. Because obviously the sooner they go through that reassignment process, if that's what is the route they want to take, the sooner they can get on with their life.
Yeah.
Now, I'm conscious that we are running out of time, but there's one group of children that I really must talk to you about. The children direct provision.
Yes.
So you have 4,786 residents in direct provision in May this year. And of these, 1,042 were aged 12 or younger. And a recent report that was just published by the Department of Justice found that young people are dissatisfied with the system. You know, their personal well-being, their family life, private life, social life is adversely affected by the system. It's been going on for so long.
Right.
What plans do you have, and how can we just improve the lives of these children? Because psychologically speaking, you can just imagine how they're impacted.
It is. It's an institution, essentially, you know, and we know our history with institutions in Ireland. We've done very badly in with them, especially with children in institutions. It's a closed system which really hampers their progress, their family development, their personal development. What we've done, and we've fought very hard to get access to children in this situation. They were the last group of children in Ireland who didn't have access to my office, and thankfully since April we now have that access.
That's fantastic, because I remember speaking to your predecessor, Emily Logan, and she was saying, unbelievably, she couldn't go into the direct provision centre.
Right.
So as of this April,
we're making strides. We're getting there.
Fantastic.
You know, so we've managed to get around to probably about half of the centres up to now. What we're doing is we're just introducing ourselves. We're working with the NGOs and the people and the advocates who are already in there, and we're letting them know that we're there, and we're providing them with the opportunity to make complaints. We've already had complaints. You know, we thought it would take a bit longer for people to trust us to come forward because it's a scary place to be. But the thing, the fabulous thing about the consultation that was published recently was the fact that children, and I've always said this, children don't ask for more than they need. They very simply said, we want good food, we want privacy, we want our papers sorted out quicker. You know, simple stuff. And I think we can do that if we have the will for it. And we really want to prove that we're a society that welcomes people. You know, the Cedmuir Fáilte is about strangers, it's not about ourselves. And we really need to live by that more and more for these young people, because it is hampering them. And I do think we're storing up another tribunal, another crisis in the future where people have to explain this for themselves. And we're also losing huge valuable assets to our country. I mean, there's people in there who are professors, who are surgeons, who are engineers. It beggars belief that we're in that situation. We're one of the few countries in the world that doesn't allow the people in that situation to work after a certain period of time. That's fine, a certain period of time. But we need to move that way, because the children are being hampered at every turnaround. You know, they don't have access to proper friendships because they can't bring the children home. Their access to extracurricular activities is seriously hampered. Just their development and their
They haven't
protection.
Seen their own parents cook a meal for them.
Correct. You know, and I mean, it's as simple things like that. And again, as I say, the children don't ask for much. They ask for food that's different. They ask for food that they know from Africa or from wherever part of their country is. They want food that's not the same every single day. They don't want the same. They don't want to be treated as if they're refugees, as if they're in some sort of different people.
Detention camp.
Yeah. So it's humanity that needs to come forward with this. And I think that's part of the progress we've made by getting in there. And I think hopefully we'll be able to help tell those stories in the future as well and make a difference by improving those systems for everybody.
Well, Niall Muldoon, Ireland's Ombudsman for Children, thank you so much for joining us here on Global Village. We're huge fans of the work that you do, and he's hoping that we can get you back again
for
a progress report on all the work that you do. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Jill. Appreciate it.